Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Hard Truth with myself, David Vance, and
Alana Mercer. Hi, David.
Hi, Alana. Great to see you. Another non-eventful week as ever in the political world, where we have small matters of actual insurrections apparently happening in the States. We've got vaccine passport madness here in the UK. And what we're going to do is try and shine a little light on a lot of the darkness, metaphorically and literally in my case here, that surrounds us. We're going to do that. Folks, if you are listening to this or if you're watching this, just make sure you hit the subscribe button, please. Help out Alana and myself. We appreciate that. And the way you do that best is by hitting the subscription button. So I hope you'll do that for us. And Alana, yeah, as I say, every week's an interesting week, but some are more interesting than others. And I guess for me, let's start with in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, the 9/11 memorial, the 20th memorial of 9/11. We had a U.S. president. We had them all, the mafiosa, as I call them, gathered together at Ground Zero, but kept away from all the people, obviously, Alana. And they all came along and they got their photo opportunity. And George W. Bush made a speech, didn't he, Alana? And well, that speech that George W.'s, because he took the opportunity to zero in on the fact that there are enemies in the U.S., people who don't respect,
you know. David, I was watching this and I just rushed. I'm trying not to blog, trying to get my time organized to do a book. But I just rushed to the blog and I just wrote, Genghis Bush destroyed a country or two, now he turns on his countrymen. I could not believe that this man, who's seen the MAGA movement, the best thing that Trump ever did was turn on Genghis Bush, George Bush, and still came up with these words. He said, what did he say? Shall I read it? He said, we have seen growing evidence, David, that the dangers to our country can come not only across borders, but from violence that gathers within. There's a little cultural overlap between violent extremists abroad and violent extremists at home. But in their disdain for pluralism, in their disregard for human life, in their determination to defile national symbols, they are children of the same foul spirit. And it is our duty to continue to confront them. Of course, it was obvious who he was talking about.
Yeah, he's talking about BLM. BLM.
Yes. And the Taliban.
Yeah. No, it wasn't, of course.
They don't like pluralism and they don't like diversity. Have you seen their charming government, the picture of the, I don't want to go on a tangent here, but certainly that's all. Fox News has gone, other than our darling Tucker, Fox News has gone neoconservative, and all we hear is about women's rights. Look at the Taliban's government, and they're all bearded men with turbans. And I said to my husband, well, there is hope. Maybe one of them is transitioning.
Possibly, yeah. That's it. That's possible, isn't it? But yes, that speech was code. He was having a go at MAGA, and he used 9/11 to have a go at the MAGA movement. And I thought, and that's why I really like your, I love the Genghis Bush line, I think you used, Alana. I mean, it's staggering. Here's a guy who was a catastrophe as US president in so many ways. And yet he gathered on the 20th anniversary and used that to have a go at patriots, which, took my breath away.
Even if he didn't think that the January 6ers are patriots, I was actually astounded. He surprised me. I didn't think the shrub, we used to call him the shrub during his the heyday of his destructive, he had two terms, right? Yeah. So, he destroyed two countries. So I didn't think he would take a swipe at the January 6th and compare them to 9/11. That was to the 9/11 terrorists who, by the way, were in a intricately tied to the Saudi government.
Yeah.
And after the 9/11, when we had the commission and most of it was reducted, the findings, it was said that it was a conspiracy to speak, to pair the 9/11, the way that the Bush family, the Bin Laden family got away so easily, that many of them were in the country, and to tie things to Bush. But now I see that the left is talking about this 20 years hence. So, yeah, so that's what George Bush did.
Yeah, for me, this whole thing about comparing MAGA movement to terrorism fits in with the Democrat narrative as well, whereby the single biggest threat facing the US is white supremacist terrorists, which is their euphemism for the MAGA movement as well. So George W. Bush, I put it to you, he is a I'd said he's every bit as bad as Obama and Biden, every bit as bad, but actually he's worse, because they don't pretend to be pretty much what they're not, whereas he did. He pretended to be different, but totally the same.
Well, he is neoconservative, and I think they are two sides of the neoliberals and neoconservatives. They're two sides of the same bird of prey, you know. With apologies to birds of prey who are wonderful. Bird of prey community. So
no,
George Bush has always been the quintessential neoconservative. He concocted the Iraq War. He knew what was going on. He had his little coterie of intelligence, which he separated from some veteran intelligent folks who said there were no weapons of mass destruction. And he was determined and very primitively, atavistically smart about wanting to take down Saddam, which he did. Before Saddam Hussein was deposed, the main cause of death in Iraq was the Lancet magazine. Is it British? The Lancet?
Yep. I think so, yeah.
They did this research paper. I think it came out a few years after the war was launched, the invasion of Iraq. And before Saddam was removed, the primary cause of death in Iraq was natural causes. And thereafter, after the merciful intervention of this mass murderer, it became war, dispossession, bombs, and so on, and terrorism, so on and so forth. So he really did destroy Iraq.
He did. Well, I mean, the thing is, Alana, without wishing to flatter you unnecessarily, but I would say this to viewers and listeners: if you'd been following Alana, and maybe some of you have and do, but if you followed Alana back in around about 2001, 2002, 2003, I mean, it's really clear what you were saying then, Alana. And you know, sadly, you've been proven absolutely right. And so if Alana is absolutely right in what she was saying then, I'm pretty sure she's probably right in what she's saying now. So that's why you need to pay attention to her. Never mind me. Pay attention to Alana.
The issue with being right 10 or 20 years ahead of time is disregard you and then claim your truth. In fact, in America, the only time truth is recognized when it becomes uttered by the establishment. So I think I was just written off, and the anti-war community, certainly all of us opposed the war. And I think I remember the day that round about the time, it was the 19th of September when I came out against the Bush's invasion. I thought there was just war justification to the Afghanistan invasion. Yeah. Unlike some libertarians, I said there's absolutely just war justification going into Afghanistan. Bush did the right thing. He approached the Taliban, who were harboring the Bin Laden. The Taliban said, no, you can't have Bin Laden, and he invaded, then he should have left.
That was the thing. The moment to leave was about probably 2 or 3 months, maybe, having gone in.
September 19th, I lost my syndication and I became persona non grata.
Join the club. All the best people are never welcomed into the establishment clubs. We know that, Alana, only too well. But Bush, yeah, it was pretty monstrous to listen to him speak like that. And I think it was picked up. I think the MAGA movement pretty much despises him anyway. So, you know.
It was quite strange because a lot of people, I think, when you were on Twitter, and certainly now I maintain a very quiet presence on Twitter. I was just banned the other day for a day or two, which I relished. But on Twitter, a lot of my followers came back and said, and these are radical people, came back and said, do you think he was talking about Robert E. Lee and the statues that were being removed? And I said, you know, if you are a MAGA man or woman and you think that George Bush was not clear, he was talking about the state, the only thing that matters, defiling the state, Uncle Sam, the ultimate predator. That was he was absolutely plain in his words about January 6th. And some of our people still want to give him the benefit of the doubt, which is a great.
No, I mean, honestly, I'll tell you, Alana, and it's not for this discussion, but like we've just seen, I think today in California, I believe the result of the recall is there's not going to be a recall with Newsom winning valiantly. And I saw some people on the Republican side of things saying, well, you know, we have to accept defeat graciously. And yeah, but your reaction, that was my reaction. I just thought, you know, you need to learn to be bad losers. You really need to learn that, but they don't.
The thing is, what we have to accept is that all you see on Fox News is a lot of very stupid people, aside Tucker, although he has stupid guests like Candace Owens. But you see stupid people coming on and waxing fat about how shame the Californians and this is what they have to live under, and the homelessness and the fires and the decimation of the water source. They voted for this guy. They voted for this guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And you know, I'm not sure if I said this to you before, but the last time I was in San Francisco was 2015 was my last venture there. And I'd been in about 10 years before that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, Alana, the difference in San Francisco in 10 years, the Fisherman's Wharf and all up around Union Square, full of homeless, druggies, it was horrible. I would never, ever go back.
No.
But that's what they vote for.
And the same in Seattle, they vote for it. Mm. The same in Washington State, where I reside, the same thing.
It's very difficult.
And the Republicans, you have to give it to the Democrats. They are so strong in their, you know, if we wanted to discuss General Milley today, subversive actions. I saw the spokesperson from the Pentagon. They're going to get away with it, and the Republicans will let them get away with the fact that this man went, you know, basically did a little military coup, a test run for a military coup.
Well, exactly, because all we've heard for 6 or 7 or 8 months is insurrection regarding January 6th. But this story, so let's bring this story up, Jed. Let's put this up on the screen. And Alana, maybe you can, for the benefit particularly of our English viewers, if you could just sort of talk us through what this is really all about.
I knew you'd do this to me. So what happened was that we have a book. It's called, what is the book called? Peril? A book by a very famous Bob Woodward. Yep. And another journalist, Robert Costa. And this hasn't been verified yet. And, of course, I tend to believe that it's probably true that General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and this is important, in October, on October the 30th, that was before the result of the election was clear, he contacted his counterpart in China and said to him, don't worry, sit tight. The American government is stable. We're not going to launch any kinetic attack on you, whatever that means, I guess. Yeah. That's military for something.
Yeah.
And then, but this was before the election. So what was he doing? This was before he was probably preempting something on the MAGA side. And then he did that again later. And what he said was so surprising. He said, "General Lee, you and I have known each other for 5 years." He contacted the Chinese chief of staff, and if we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It's not going to be a surprise, David. And there's one thing that immediately struck me, irrespective of all the other issues, the structural issues that we're going to deal with, is that this man was promising to reveal his military position, right? Yeah. If there was an attack on the enemy, he was giving the enemy heads up and betraying his soldiers. This is another thing that I haven't seen covered in the commentary about this very, very, this awful business. Finally, pundits were saying the word treason, although treason applies equally to an open border. You know, it always has an open border where people stream across. That the word treason is certainly applicable there. But finally, pundits and others were using the word treason to describe, we have a civilian control military. Here we had a military man usurping civilian, usurping the president. He's supposed to advise the president. He was usurping the president, going to the enemy, going to China, and telling him to sit tight because he has the guns, he said to his soldiers afterwards, when he was extracting from his command loyalties. He said, "We have the guns. We have the guns. We are the guys with the guns," he told his little coterie, his milieu. And, this is what this man – and in his favor, you saw that Colonel Alexander Vindman, he was the man who – testified about the Ukraine phone call. He was the only honest Democrat to come out and say, "This is not right. This is not right." What are your thoughts, David?
To me, Alana, it's another breathtaking story. I mean, you're very right to point out that this is not verified, so we can't be certain. And you've got to ask questions, actually, from a journalistic point of view. If Woodward and the other guy, is it Cato?
Costa.
Yeah. If they knew this back then, why have they sat on it for all this time?
Yes.
I think that's a reasonable point to ask, because this goes to the heart of how the whole system works. This guy appeared to be speaking directly to the enemy, but they sat on that. So I wouldn't be, so you can't be, we don't know for definite, but like yourself, I suspect the story probably is right. And I think the book is released in a few days' time, so I'm sure it will make a lot of money for the authors. And you've got to ask questions about their integrity, actually, dare I suggest. But if it be true, and we're both saying, if it be true, it's got a massive impact. I mean, that guy cannot reside in position, surely, Alana, can he?
But he will. He will. As I said, the Pentagon spokesperson was already, being very blasé, very cool about it. This is something that the president's advisors, and even in the military, continuously do. They always have contact with our adversaries and our friends. That's what they do. They tamp down fires. He was just being really cool about it. None of the Democrat media asked questions. I think Jennifer Griffin of Fox News was the only one who persevered. And and anyhow, if it goes to commission, which is the only thing the Republicans are going to be able to muster, I always say that commissions, government commissions, are where matters go to die.
Yes.
That's where they bury everything. So I think he won't resign. He's been slow to, I think, do you know if he's released a comment? I think he has.
Not that I'm aware of, as we're recording this, Alana. I'm not aware, but I mean, we've talked on previous Hard Truth podcasts about the kind of the absolute state in which the U.S. military has fallen. And it's been actually quite a theme that you and I have picked up on over the months. And, but And whilst I completely saw all the points we were making, I didn't realize that the guy at the absolute top, the top guy, on the phone to China saying, don't worry about it, guys. Don't worry about it. We got the guns. Don't worry. We're in control.
To repeat, David, what alarmed me, everybody touched on the right points in pointing out how criminal, treasonous this was. But no one pointed out that he was saying, how can these soldiers trust him? He was saying, don't worry, if we go to war against you and my, you know, I will tell you where the positions are, you know.
How many soldiers was he going to sacrifice?
Yeah, I mean, how can soldiers, provided they have the intelligence to comprehend what's going on, I don't know anymore, how can our soldiers have confidence that this man's not going to say, hey, They're there. You can bomb them, you know.
Well, they do say that a dead fish rots from the head down. And so maybe that's what we're witnessing in the US military. It's from a UK point of view, it's kind of horrific to see it. And actually, Alana, even more horrific is the kind of lack of interest in the story in big sections of the media. It's like, yeah, these things happen every day. Yeah. We always tell China what we're going to do. What?
You know, the media, I know it's a cliche, set to say, you know, fake news, it's a cliche, but the American media is particularly evil, particularly corrupt. I get The Economist, and they will cover everything. They have a perspective. They're classically left liberal. But they've done a fabulous job on the liberal left. Their last, I shouldn't be promoting Economist, but you have media, some media that does the job that isn't dissident media, that is mainstream media. You still have, and as you say, you still have a military that seems to be pretty proper and buttoned up. And, you know, these people are unhinged. Do you remember when the same Milley, he was forced to march in a show of strength when we had the BLM riots to Lafayette Square, and they were setting a church, an old church, on fire. He was forced to march behind Trump when Trump dared to do a little bit of showmanship, with the Bible and stand in front of the church. He, Milley, released an apologetic video afterwards saying he was wrong to do that and offering obsequious apologies. And not to forget, he has said, I'm a white man, but I'm an intellectual, so therefore I'm interested in critical race theory. Well,
critical
race theory is sub-intelligent.
Hey, listen, all he needs to do is dye his hair purple and tell us that he's transitioning to an unknown gender, and then he'd be perfect for 2021. Anyway,
David, at the same time, he's very muscular. He has the whole presence, doesn't he? It's so deceptive to see these men, often not very effete and not very effeminate, who are so corrupt. And so I always associate a Democrat general with someone who is more degenerate, but he seems he's got the whole aura going.
Well, I think that they all do have to, you know, but I'll tell you what, we've come a long way from General Patton is all I would say. Right, Alana, we're moving the show on, and the final section is, you and I were talking to each other, I think it was Sunday or Monday, earlier on in the week anyway, when the news, I think it was Sunday, Monday morning, that the news broke in the UK that the threat of vaccine passports, you've got to have a passport to go to the shops, was being pushed away. It was being taken off the table. And you contacted me and we were saying, cause for celebration. And I was somewhat certain.
You were very calm. You said, don't believe it. And you were right.
So if we can bring up the headline, let's bring up the, this was within about, 48 hours, whatever, Alana. Everywhere, vaccine passports could be enforced under Boris Johnson's plan B to avoid winter lockdown. That was 48 hours in the history of the spineless British government. And here we have Boris insisting that that even though plans for COVID passports have been put on ice, they can still play an important part of our repertoire in fighting the virus. Alana, in what way could vaccine passports help us fight the virus?
Well, David, I'll defer to you. You know about these things. Well, I've tried to, you know, it's just so hopeless, and the fact that the Anglosphere is so, you know, there were some demonstrations against us in Montreal, quite a lot in France, right? Much more, but nothing in the US and in England.
In England,
and yes. And how do you explain the fact that the press was plastered with these announcements that Boris Johnson was not going to do? Explain to me the dynamics of that. How did that happen?
Alana, that's a great question. And the answer actually speaks to the way in which things have changed in the past year and a half. Over the past year and a half, the biggest advertiser in the media is the government. So they've spent about a third of a billion, roughly, a third of a billion. And that's gone into press, it's gone into TV. And obviously that's the government's ads pushing, and it's a particular narrative, whether one agrees with it or not. So what that's meant, Alana, is really quite brutally, they've bought the media. The British government has bought the British media. So that's why whenever stories like this are put out, I'm so incredibly cynical, because I know that, for example, I put out one of my own podcasts today talking, because Boris is plan A and plan B. Plan A does not involve vaccine passports. Plan B does. The purpose of plan A, in my view, is to get to plan B. So whether we like it or not, by the time, when we're chatting to each other in the dog days of November and December, I fully expect the UK to have mandatory mask mandates. It will have potentially vaccine passports. Life's going to be very tough. That's why I said it's a dark winter is coming. And you talked about this last week. It's a really good point. We talked about the way the Anglosphere, because you could throw in New Zealand and Australia very easy into this conversation, and it would all be the same. Why has it gone this way? Become almost tyrannical and imposing things which don't make logical sense. And, you know, it really is a question of our times, Alana, because it's not so obvious in other countries, as you and I have previously discussed. But why the Anglosphere, America, Canada, Britain, Australia, New Zealand, the Five Eyes, why are they so blind?
We have promised to discuss that. I even sent you a column related. We need to get to that. But the reason I go blank when you say, will it work, is that I sort of have a mental block when anybody talks about pragmatism, when you have a violation of rights. So I don't care if vaccine passports are pragmatic and work. They are a violation of, you don't have a written constitution. If only you had one. Do you think that would make a difference? I don't know. You have an unwritten constitution.
We have an unwritten constitution.
And a strong tradition of Magna Carta, liberties. Our liberties came from your tradition, right?
Yeah, so, we have the 16.
You invented it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but that's all been discarded. But you're right, Alana, and that's a nice way of putting it.
And the same thing with Canada. They have a Charter of Rights. Some legal scholars are talking about a challenge. Nothing has happened. The same in the US. There's been no challenge to these ordinances. So,
yeah, that's right. Because it's a fundamental. My issue on this is it's a fundamental abrogation of our rights. It's an absolute invasion in our liberty and freedom. I mean, the way this one will work, if it happens, is to me, and this is why I worry about it so much, I see vaccine passports as the prototype of a digital ID, and a digital ID is essentially total control of individual people by the state. Starts off with, you know, it can start off with vaccines, but they can add loads of things. They can determine
your medical records, everything.
Yeah.
They know that you're taking certain drugs. You don't get a gun license in the US. On and on. This is why. Yeah, you're right. I didn't think of that.
I mean, that's why for me it's a hill to die upon. And so I know the British government want to do it. They want to bring it in. But the curious thing is, Alana, I was across in London just a week or so ago, and you know something? Life was normal, and there was none of this. So there's a huge dichotomy at one level between what you see with your own eyes and what you experience and that which they are plotting and what they are trying. It's the same in the States, I guess, with Biden telling everyone, take the jab, or Dr. Fauci telling us in the last 24 hours that he wants the kids to take the jab and the on-jab should not be allowed to fly. I mean, this is just tyranny, simple as that.
The on-jab is still 80 million strong, and I certainly hope that any businesses that continue, and I read in the article you sent me that supermarkets were on his agenda imagine having you might not be able to shop for food. Yep. So I just hope that businesses that enforce this vaccine passport are as populated as the moon.
And
go belly up, yeah.
Yeah, I hope so as well. I think it's going to be, I think it's the most difficult thing for them to push through. So that's why I think Boris has pirouetted away from it, but I think he intends to come back to it. We shall see what he comes up with. And meanwhile, the French are showing lots of the old French resistance, which is good to see. They're not taking it lying down. And even in Australia, which is such a problematic, New South Wales, I mean, such a problematical area, and what's happening there is kind of unbelievable. But then, of course, it falls within the remit of China.
I mean, they have military rule, right? I mean, General Milley should emigrate. You know, there's no debate there whether he's allowed to conduct foreign policy and set nuclear policy either.
My conclusion about Australia is it started life as a penal colony. And guess what? It's finished as a penal colony. This time self-imposed, though. So, you know, if people don't resist in any of this, and it's again a theme we've talked about in all these topics, and it's a hard truth, you know, if people just sit back and take it all, they will discover that they all end up in the furnace, all of them. So you do have to, you know, you have to analyze things, you've got to think for yourself, make your own decisions. I respect people, Alana, on all perspectives. That's okay by me. But, you know, if you see something that you think is wrong, and vaccine passports are totally wrong in my view, then I think it's appropriate to question that, although in these times of censorship it's difficult. Anyway, Alana, our time has rattled by like a fast train with Joe Biden on board, with crowds booing him and shouting.
David, I just have to commend you. The penal colony was brilliant. It began as a penal colony and ended as a penal colony. And yeah, excellent.
It's true, but the awful thing is, it's true. I wish it wasn't true. You know, I was in Australia about 4 or 5 years ago, and a lovely place, really interesting place. But when I see it, it's unrecognizable, and I would never want to go there again based on what I've seen today. But where we're going now, Alana, is we're going to the end of the show. So look, as always, it's such a pleasure to spend 30 minutes with you in your presence and talking about these issues. Thank you to everyone who's watched this and who will listen to this. And do remember, hit the subscribe button. That's what Alana and I want to see. Get on board our train of hard truths. Whether, you know, we got to confront these things, and we try to do it every week. So look, thanks everybody for your time. Thanks, Alana. So it's goodbye from me.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.